most of these mental health conditions are functional, and so it's either a communication problem or an area not generating enough or generating too much of a certain brainwave. And there's all sorts, like we've now pinpointed 8 different subtypes of anxiety in the brain. So you have, I won't go into too much detail, but there are 8 types, and you could have, some people experiencing severe anxiety might have 6, 7 or all 8 of the subtypes that need to be fixed.
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As a naturopathic doctor and anthropologist, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people exactly like you. Your business, body balance, and inner badass, these are the themes we are exploring. So hang tight, everybody. Today's episode was a doozy. I was joined by Corey Deacon, the co-founder and medical director of Nirvana, a clinic in Calgary that focuses on brain health and something called quantitative EEG. Now, Corey's credentials are exhaustive. He has a doctorate in natural medicine. He's a certified functional medicine practitioner, and he's a member of the Examining Board of Natural Medicine Practitioners of Canada. He has extensive experience exploring how lifestyle has an effect on brain health, and not just brain health as it pertains to concussions or trauma, but as it pertains to anxiety and depression and ADD and some of the more functional disorders that are, quite frankly, systemic in our population. Corey and I went deep on the science. We geeked out on some of the things that you should be looking at in your own lifestyle, how you can start to make shifts on a daily basis, and the top 3 things that we are both seeing affecting people in a chronic way, and they are definitely not what you expect. If you are interested in understanding how your brain can serve you at its highest potential and how you can preserve your brain activity very, very long into life, then this episode is designed especially for you. It's my pleasure to introduce you to Corey Deacon. Corey Deacon, welcome to the Entrepology Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
We have a lot to get into, and I want to warn our audience before we even get started, we're going to geek out in a really big way about the brain and neuroscience and neurofeedback and biofeedback and peptides and all these things that a lot of you probably haven't heard about before. So if you're going to jump out, now is the time to do it. But if you're even the just smidgen amount of curious about what Corey and I are going to get into today, Corey, I would love for you to start off by giving everyone a background in terms of who you are and how we got to this place today.
Yeah, sure. So I'm a medical scientist with a doctorate in natural medicine. I have a fellowship in anti-aging and regenerative medicine, and I'm board certified in quantitative EEG and neurofeedback, which we're going to get into, but it's a neuroimaging technique similar to a functional MRI. I started doing what I do because I actually had a lot of head injuries when I was growing up. I played football and hockey, and I never had any immediate acute problems following my head injuries. But what happened is in my early 20s, when I was in my master's, I started getting problems with my brain. I started getting anxiety. I started getting panic attacks. My cognition didn't work properly. I was always an honor student, and all of a sudden, you know, I couldn't read a sentence without forgetting what I read. So I started really struggling, and I went to doctors, and it was, you know, kind of, I wanted to figure out why this was happening. You know, it was scary. I didn't know what was going on. I had a feeling that it was from my old concussions, but nobody ever gave me confirmation, and nobody could ever really tell me why. It was just always, well, you know, try this med, try that med. And that really disappointed me, because as a researcher, you know, I always want to find out why. So I started going the naturopathic medicine route, and I started seeing some similarities down that road where, you know, instead of using pharmaceuticals, people were offering me natural alternatives, which I did appreciate, but it was still this kind of you know, throw things at the wall and see what sticks. And there is still a lot of guesswork involved. And so, you know, I got a little bit better with some dietary changes and some natural approaches, but I still wasn't anywhere close to where I was prior to this crash that I had. And then I discovered quantitative EEG, which is a neuroimaging technique that allows you to quantify the function of the brain. And this is really appealing to me because MRIs and CTs are pretty much useless when it comes to analyzing the function of the brain, where they look mainly at structure. And anybody that understands the brain knows that structure does not equal function. So this was a way for me to actually analyze and quantify my brain waves. And, you know, it blew me away. And so I actually ended up getting a job at a functional medicine clinic when I was doing my doctorate, and I started running the brain treatment side of their operation. And that was where I was utilizing QEEG and analyzing. I analyzed a few thousand brains anyway, and we can triage people through the analyzing of the brain. We can figure out what's going on, what the underlying reasons are for their symptoms, and then what we need to do to actually start fixing them. And so we were actually utilizing a functional integrative medicine model as well. And I started learning from that, you know, how to look at the brain and figure out what may be going on and pick the proper testing to utilize instead of looking at, you know, thousands of dollars of testing. And trying to look at absolutely everything, there was a way that we could really hone in on what the problem was. So, you know, this is being able to analyze the cause of anxiety, the cause of depression, the cause of sleep problems. If there's been traumatic brain injuries, how has that brain injury created problems? What problems exist? And it can even be used preventatively as well. So you can take a look at if certain things are going on and there might be a degenerative process of some sort. And we pair this with another assessment called event-related potentials, which is, I like to just call it a cognoscopy, similar to a colonoscopy. But we look at this cognition because these cognitive markers will start dropping 20 years before a degenerative process becomes clear in the brain. And we can actually do something 20 years prior if we can catch it. And because the changes are so subtle, like you might only have a 100 milliseconds, a tenth of a second disruption in processing, and that's significant. And obviously nobody's going to be able to see that with the naked eye, but you can actually pick it up with equipment. So, we started utilizing all these great neuroscience principles that really ought to have been implemented in healthcare, you know, decades ago, but, you know, here we are. And so that's kind of the long story short as to what got me into what I'm doing.
Well, and you highlight this really important thing, which is these are all things that should have been integrated and should be integrated into healthcare. But we're so consumed on at least the public side of the reactionary side of medicine, the downstream, the drowning, that it's almost like we just don't have time to also deal with this preventative piece. And this is so critical because I think when we start to look at, you know, quality of life in the last third of life, the last quarter of life, if we have the capacity to access our brain, and then tie that to our physical health, we are opening up a whole new chapter in an unprecedented way. So I want to get into that piece, but can you explain for people a little bit when you're talking about quantitative analysis and you're actually measuring these brain waves, what is it that you are actually looking at? Because when we run some of these tests in our practice, people are like, what are you looking at? Can you tell how smart I am? Are you looking at intelligence? Like what are the things that you're actually measuring and why are they important?
Yeah. So what we're measuring specifically is electrical activity in the brain. So the brain is an electrochemical organ, which actually we're starting to learn that several of our organs are this way, which means that it utilizes electricity to function as well as chemistry. And so what we look at is the electrical side of it. Our brain is putting off these waves as it communicates and as it functions, and we can pick them up at the level of the scalp. And traditionally, we've used something called EEG, which is what we'll usually use, and we'll look qualitatively to see if there's seizure activity, paroxysmal activity, encephalopathy, and these different dysfunctional brain patterns. But with the development of quantitative EEG, it's taken us to a whole other level where we can compare this electrical activity to a normative database to see, you know, are you expressing frequencies at too high or too low of levels? How is your brain communicating? What are the networks doing deeper down? Because network function is dependent upon electricity. And so we have these different generators in our brain that generate electricity, and they, you know, for instance, the brainstem generates electricity in a certain frequency called delta. The limbic or the emotional system of the brain generates electricity in the form of theta. The thalamus is another area kind of deep down. We call it subcortical, meaning it's below the cortex or below the all the fancy, the folds that you see in the brain if you've ever seen a brain. And it generates alpha rhythm. And then the outer cortex, which is like the smart or more evolved part of the brain, generates beta, high beta, and gamma waves. And all of these waves are doing something different in the brain. So it's like a very complex car engine. Is the way I like to look at it, where things are generating and producing energy and communicating with each other. We have another area at the back of our brain called the cerebellum, which is the timing belt that times and orchestrates all the signals that are coming through the brain. And this is usually actually the structure that's disrupted with a traumatic brain injury or even a subconcussive head injury. So yeah, what we're really assessing are electrical activity, and we're able to get to such fine detail now that we can actually compare to a functional MRI. And this is the production of something called SW Loretta, which was just released about 6 months ago. And it allows us to actually see even how all the different neural tracks, we have all these tracks that run through the brain, and this looks like wiring running through the brain. We can actually assess those and see, are they under-communicating, over-communicating? Are they sending enough information? Is there too much information going one way or another? We had a really interesting example of a young guy who was having auditory hallucinations. And what was happening was there was an area in his brain that's supposed to encode emotional information. And it brings in sensory information like what we're hearing, sounds around us. And there's supposed to be more information flowing into that area from our auditory cortex. What was happening for him was the opposite. It was flowing the opposite way, and it was triggering auditory hallucinations. And we were able to see it on the quantitative EEG. It was incredible.
That's amazing.
And then once you can see it, you can fix it, which is the concept of neuroplasticity.
I love that. And so when we talk about brain health, we've got traditional things that people think of, dementia and Alzheimer's and trauma to the brain. What about these things that, you know, supposedly we can't see, depression and anxiety and some of the things that fall on the spectrum of emotional or psychological conditions or diagnoses? Do you see shifts in terms of the testing that you're doing in those patients and those individuals?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is one thing that quantitative EEG is very sensitive at picking up. So because, again, most of these functional mental health disorders, anxiety, depression, sleep disorders, ADD, ADHD, autism kind of overlaps with functional and structural problems. But yeah, I mean, most of these mental health conditions are functional. And so it's either a communication problem or an area not generating enough or generating too much of a certain brainwave. And there's all sorts, like we've now pinpointed 8 different subtypes of anxiety in the brain. So you have, I won't go into too much detail, but there are 8 types, and you could have some people experiencing severe anxiety might have 6, 7 or all 8 of the subtypes that need to be fixed. So, you know, there's an inflammatory subtype. There's an immune regulation subtype. There's a metabolic or energy production subtype. There's a frontal lobe asymmetry subtype. There's a trauma subtype. There's a communication or a network dysfunction subtype, which typically overlaps with head injury. There's a cerebellar subtype, which is the timing of the signals not being sent properly. And there's a basal ganglia subtype. So there's a lot that can be going on. And so this is why we find it so important to look at this. We actually, everybody who comes to our clinic, you know, whether they have a mental health problem or cancer, get one of these brain maps, because it tells us something about how the brain and subsequently the rest of the body might be functioning. So it's really important that we know that we can see, say, for instance, there's an inflammatory subtype. We can see that, and then we know that we can go to work and we're going to get some effect. If we have a trauma subtype and we try to treat inflammation, they're not going to really get anywhere, because it's the trauma that's the problem. And we need to utilize early trauma approaches, PTSD approaches, stuff like that. So it's been, integrating this into our clinic has just absolutely changed our and our clients' worlds, because of the predictability and the accuracy of what we can do for them. So,
well, and it would allow you to really predict treatment. I mean, traditionally, when you engage in the system and you have a diagnosis of generalized anxiety, there's a series of three or four medications that are offered to you as an option.
That's right.
And I'm assuming what you are seeing here is you're really able to recognize when that is, and predict when that is actually going to be a good choice and when it's actually just going to be a useless intervention for that individual.
That's right. And that, and you can actually, there's an assay called GeneCept, which is actually DynaLife lab now, and there is some coverage in Canada for insurance, which is amazing. If you can take a QEEG and a GeneCept, you can look at where the genetic tendencies are, you can see how the brain is functioning, and you can also pick an optimal medication as well. So that's really important. I see that a lot, because this is the same thing with medications. Like you said, there's the kind of the first line treatment to, say, anxiety, right? Generally, it's a, now we've moved more towards SSRIs, because we don't want people on benzodiazepines long term. But you get that first line therapy. If you fail it, you go to the second. If you fail it, you go to the third. And it's literally just throw everything at the wall and see what sticks. So there's no predictability. There's no accurate idea of whether they're going to respond well. And if somebody has, for instance, an alpha or a metabolic related subtype for anxiety, a benzodiazepine makes them feel worse. And a lot of times doctors can't figure out why that is. And right. So, yeah, I mean, it is an absolutely, in my opinion, now in my practice, essential tool. I wouldn't be able to operate without it, because it just allows me to really know what is causing that problem for that person. Because it can be difficult. And I know for you being a clinician as well, you have somebody come in with anxiety, it can be really difficult to figure out what's causing that anxiety. And you know, it looks a little different from person to person. And so, yeah, it's been absolutely essential for us to find out, you know, what the subtype is and how to approach it.
Well, and especially for the entrepreneurial population, anxiety is just such a pervasive challenge for so many individuals. And it's a real source of distraction and frustration that people are going through so many different practitioners and trying different interventions in an attempt to manage it. And certainly there's, you know, a cognitive behavioral therapy that can make a difference for a lot of people, and coaching, but there's still the biochemistry piece that is often a huge component. So I really love this. I'm wondering, Corey, too, if you can comment, and we were talking about this before, but I just want to throw it at you, because there's just so many conversations around it right now. The influence of CBD on the type of analyses that you're doing in the brain. Are you seeing specific or consistent patterns, or does it really depend on the individual?
It's highly dependent, because the cannabinoid receptor is the receptor family is so complex, and it's really interesting the way cannabinoids work in the brain. They actually create presynaptic changes, which basically means that it's almost like they're working in the past in what's called a retrograde way, whereas almost every other neurotransmitter that we have works the other way, where we go, it works postsynaptically, pre to post. So it's really hard to actually track what CBD is doing. Now we know that it has some anti-inflammatory activity. So we'll typically see that come up in a delta rhythm in the brain. We also find that it does affect another rhythm that's the highest rhythm called gamma, which is the integrative frequency. CBD on its own is a difficult one to track functionally because it does kind of change depending on what the person needs, how their CBD or cannabinoid receptors are being expressed, and as well another receptor called melanopsin and melanocortin receptors, which are actually the receptors that receive light from our environment and then will change what we need to turn on in terms of hormones and neurotransmitters and that sort of thing. Depending on the person's light environment, they're going to get a different effect as well. So we find that CBD is very effective for people that are, getting out in the sun, especially at sunrise and sunset, and limiting blue light in their environment in the form of LED and fluorescent lights. We see a different shift in those people on CBD than we do in people that aren't paying attention to their light environment and might actually live a very light toxic environment. So these are generally people working in office buildings with fluorescent lights or that are working on night shift. So, and then we do have a quite, with the THC portion of cannabis, there's quite a pronounced elevation in alpha in the frontal lobe, which is why it works for some people with anxiety if they have too much activation in the frontal lobe. And if that's what's driving their anxiety, cannabis can work very well for them because it inhibits that overactivity. But for some people, it doesn't work well. And it's also one of the reasons why we're concerned about adolescents and young adults using marijuana is mm-hmm. because it affects the frontal lobe.
They say that you are the product of the five people with whom you spend the most time. Imagine you could spend time with hundreds of fellow entrepreneurs and go-getters looking to up-level their business, body, and mindset. The Entrepology Collective does not belong to us. It belongs to you. Come hang out with us on Facebook and let us collectively inspire, support, and cheerlead you towards your vision for contribution, your commitment towards better health, and your journey of mindset mastery. We are in this together. We are entrepreneurs by birth, by choice, and by mission. We are the Entrepology Collective. Search for us on Facebook and come join your tribe.
It's so interesting too that you mentioned light. We did an episode, I'm going to say probably 20 episodes ago, where we were talking about light toxicity and blue light and red light. And I'll link people up to that in the show notes, but it's not traditionally something that people are talking about. And I feel like there's so many factors with respect to our health that we're kind of like, it's almost like we expect the general population to not get it, so we don't talk about it. But it's so interesting in the research you're doing, right? Where you're like, whoa, Wi-Fi makes a difference and lights make a difference. And there's all these areas where we could be decreasing the burden of stress on the body. And we just don't go there. Are there other things when you are looking at the habits of your patient base, and because you're doing so many of these scans with your patients, where you're seeing sort of consistent habits that we engage in that really have a deleterious effect on the brain? Alcohol would be an example that comes to mind immediately, but do you have other ones that, that you can think of?
Absolutely. Yeah. So alcohol for sure. Caffeine is a big one. We overlook the deleterious effects of caffeine as well. Essentially caffeine can act as a phase 1 liver detox inducer, which mm-hmm. sounds like a good thing. We're inducing detox, but what'll happen is over time is you will deplete phase 2 detox, and then you have too many reactive products in the liver. Which eventually actually for a lot of people that we work with, long-term coffee use has been triggering food sensitivities, chemical sensitivities because of its effect on a chemical produced by the immune system called interleukin-4, which actually has an effect on what's called leaky gut or gut permeability, which can actually then lead to something called leaky mitochondria. And this actually leads into the same problem as light and getting too much blue light exposure and not enough violet or red light, which typically is what happens because we live indoor lives now. you get this mitochondrial effect where your turbines in your mitochondria that produce ATP, which is our fuel, everything in the body needs ATP to work properly. All of a sudden, it's not turning as fast anymore. That turbine slows down. Now we can't produce energy. So that's, you know, the caffeine's a big one. It also has an effect on estrogen metabolism as well, which is a big problem for women, especially if they're having menses or cancers, right? You know, God forbid, but that's a big one. And then the other problem with caffeine is I find it's kind of like buying a new car and then expecting to make money off it in 10 years. It's a divestment. You're never going to get out what you think you will long term, because you're constantly overstimulating your catecholamines, noradrenaline and adrenaline, when you drink coffee. And so you get this spike and then you get a drop back down to baseline. And if you're doing it every day and you don't give your body a chance to repair, you're constantly going to deplete how many catecholamines you can produce. And so all of a sudden you go 10, 20 years down the road, now you can't operate without coffee because you're too tired. But it's going to continue keeping you tired unless you can get off of it and get your adrenals repaired properly. So, you know, there's another problem with coffee and lectins. There's a problem with coffee and mycotoxins. You know, those are other big topics on their own accord. But yeah, you know, I find that is a big one in our practice that a lot of people don't really realize, because you see a lot of research of, oh, you know, coffee drinkers were shown to have a 5% reduction in dementia. You know, I would like to challenge the studies and where they got the population of that, first of all. And second of all, the trade-off I don't think is there. I think the risks outweigh the benefit for the most part. Now, having a coffee or two or three a week, it's probably okay if you give your body some time to repair, but it definitely can't become a daily habit, and it really can't be a 2 to 3 to 4 cup a day habit. That is just, I remember I had a guy about 6 months ago, sleep problems, couldn't fall asleep at night. And he was drinking 2 liters of coffee a day.
And, I've had those people too.
You know, it just does, but you know, well, I've been drinking coffee forever, right? And I think a lot of people have the idea that if they're going to get a problem with it, it's going to happen right away. A lot of times it's a very slow process, to the point where we don't even really recognize it until all of a sudden we're having these major chronic problems, right? So that's a big one for sure. And then, as you mentioned, the blue light exposure, Wi-Fi exposure, you know, the little microwave devices called the cell phone that we carry around with us everywhere. There's actually a good study published about 2 years ago, right before the National Institute of Health brought out their research on Wi-Fi, 3G, 4G, LTE, and Bluetooth, which I don't know if you've seen that, but it was a 10-year longitudinal study on animals, and it was a disaster in the group that was exposed to these electromagnetic frequencies, or what we call non-native electromagnetic frequencies. But there was a study published before that showed that there's a elevation of something called MMP9 with exposure to EMFs and microwaves in the frequency of 2.4 gigahertz, which is what Wi-Fi is. And they found that with MMP9, when it's elevated, it actually breaks down the extracellular matrix, or the skeleton that holds our cells together. And it allows the immune system to get into areas where it shouldn't be going. And so you see this in arthritic conditions, where the immune system is getting into joint regions and it shouldn't be there, but it's creating pain. You'll see it with almost every degenerative brain disorder as well, where the blood-brain barrier and the astrocytes is broken down because of this MMP9, and now you're getting a flood of molecules into the brain that should not be getting into the brain. Same thing with leaky gut. And so yeah, this is a big one, and it just kind of came to my attention probably about a year and a half ago. And you know, it's like you always have these people that you, for some reason, you can't get them better. And we started addressing that. We have a guy in Calgary named Mitch Marchand, who's one of the only guys around doing a true EMF RF assessment of the home, which has just been a godsend. And, you know, we started really paying attention to that and getting these people's light environments worked out. And all of a sudden, boom, they got better. You know, years of trying to get them fixed, and that was what did it. Getting them a good quality blue light blocker for their eyes during the day and at night, and yeah, just made the world a difference. So it's that is a big one, I think, that's overlooked. We either don't know or don't fully understand the effect that light has on the regulation of our system. So our brain literally brings in and uses light to figure out what time of day it is and what it needs to do. And so if you're giving it feedback that's always a blue dominant feedback, you're going to get into big trouble. And the brain is just doing what it's told. It's doing what the light environment around it is telling it to do. But you'll get a crash in melatonin regulation. And the tricky thing too is you don't always get a reduction in melatonin. So sometimes the melatonin levels are just fine, but they're not regulating properly. Eventually you burn yourself out because the blue light is actually the on switch for mitochondria. So it cranks everything on, noradrenaline. It's like coffee all the time. And so you never get this off switch and you never get this repair. So I would say out of the top three things that we do in our behaviors and our habits that are most deleterious, I would say it's a light exposure problem with EMFs, caffeine and alcohol. Those would be my top three.
I was really enjoying this interview till you attacked my coffee the way that you did. But no, I absolutely hear you. And I think it's an example of one of those inconvenient truths that we, you know, then we spend all this time, we go down this rabbit hole to find the research that really just supports what we want to do. And everybody's body's a little bit different, but I absolutely hear you. The biochemistry here really matters. And when people are actually unwell, when they're like, no, I'm actually making a big commitment to wanting to shift the quality of my health and the quality of my capacity to think, that's when you do have to start to look at these little details. And I agree with you on the mold, Wi-Fi, and light, because I have a subset of my population who come in and they've been to everybody and they have tried everything. We can't find anything wrong. And when we go after those three things, and it takes a while to get people to a place where they're willing to look at them, people start to get better. It's actually quite unbelievable.
That's right. Yeah, we have a fairly big population of chronic inflammatory response syndrome as well. Due to mycotoxins, mold toxins. I don't know if you remember, but we had a big flood here in 2014. The whole Bow River floodplain flooded out. Yeah. And so, you know, again, we have this kind of, we get the moisture cleaned up in the house, but the spore counts, the DNA fragments, the RNA fragments from these mold molecules and mycotoxins are still running rampant. And, you know, 15 to 20% of people with genetic susceptibilities are getting chronically ill, and not a lot of people can figure out why. So yeah, that's another big topic as well.
I feel like we could do this all day.
And it causes a ton of neuropsychiatric problems. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, there's so many things that happen below the surface. I agree it's important to start to look at some of these things that can have a negative implication on our health. What about some of the habits that you're seeing people engage in that are actually having really strong positive influences on brain health? Exercise, for example. Do you have a few where you're like, these are things you should include because the investment is really worth the outcome?
Absolutely. I would say exercise and sun exposure being top two. Sweating being a third, and cold exposure being a fourth. People that have a strong fitness regime, and when I say strong, it's different for everybody. I think it's most important that you're putting the effort in, because we have a lot of people that have, you know, might have POTS syndrome, so they have low blood pressure problems. They might be adrenally fatigued. They might have mold issues, and they might have a metabolic problem, so they can't output as much as somebody else may be able to. But I find anybody who is exercising, whether it's 10 minutes a day or an hour a day, getting their heart rate up and getting a sweat, they get changes much quicker. So I don't deal, unfortunately. I wish there is more people interested in prevention, but we tend to attract the people that have chronic problems. Mm-hmm. We're not a clinic that people tend to come to right off the bat. Most people see on average 7 to 8 doctors before they come and see us. So for the most part, we're seeing the chronic population. But out of people that are having chronic problems, the people that get better the quickest are the people that are exercising, being active, getting their heart rate up, and having some sort of protocol where they sweat, whether it be hot yoga, sauna, a hot bath with Epsom salt. And a lot of people don't do the cold exposure thing. I think it's getting more popular. But adding that into the mix, especially in winter, is incredible. It's been amazing seeing people do that and the effects and changes they get, not only in their blood work, but in their subjective symptoms as well.
Yeah, I haven't run my blood work yet, but we've been doing really consistent cold baths. And
great.
It's been one of those, like, we just dump buckets of ice into our bathtub. We actually burned out our ice maker in our refrigerator doing it. But I should have run my own blood work before and after, but I've just never slept better and had a more refreshed sleep. And that's data coming off of, you know, how I feel and off of my Oura Ring. But I absolutely love it. Notwithstanding that it's just actually this really cool, literally, nice pun, Megan, mental challenge to sit and immerse myself in that cold bath. And my husband, who has a ton of issues with respect to inflammation from past athletic injuries, he too is noticing that really profound shift. So, guys, get over it. Try it. It's actually really awesome. And I've got a post on my Instagram about that.
Yeah, that's right. I think everybody needs to try it. There's I have a good document I can send you on kind of warming up into cold thermogenesis.
Love it.
Because some people can't just jump into a cold bath, because I've had people try it and they're just like cold all day long. They can't warm up. There's little steps you can take, like doing face dunking, cold shower at the end of a hot shower, doing exercise or a sauna before going in. Just to the point where you're not quite sweating, but you're close. Things like that can really help you tolerate it. A higher protein, higher fat meal before you go in will help you tolerate it as well. But it's very important, especially in winter, because it's actually what resensitizes our leptin. Leptin being the master metabolizer. It's basically the hormone that tells the body, the cells of the body, when and what to metabolize. And so what happens in winter, and it's so interesting, every year it's like as soon as the UV index goes away, mid-October, and people start spending more time indoors and not outside in the sun, it's like, boom, flu season kicks in, right? It's like a light switch. And then you start having problems with mood being low, and you're stressed more, and you're not sleeping as well. It's because we were literally meant and evolved to, when our photoperiod decreases in the winter, we get exposed to cold, and it resets the leptin so that we can maintain the same bodily function throughout the year. We've now designed an environment where we don't do that. And we're just warm and cozy all the time. And so our leptin doesn't get reset. We even put weight on over the winter when that happens. And then the other thing with cold is it speeds up that turbine in the mitochondria. It speeds up ATP synthase so you can build more energy. I know when I started doing it, I used to always have problems in the winter. When I took maybe 15 minutes out of my day to get sunrise, sunset exposure, and then I cold bathed every morning. And this last two winters, I've had no drop in mood, no drop in energy, no problems with sleep. It's been just phenomenal. And, you know, it's basically free, aside from the water that you have to pay for, right? So that's the other beautiful thing about it.
Yeah, no, it is. It is basically free. There's so many of these things that are actually basically free, and you share them with people, and they're like, "What? Anything else that I can do?
Can except I take like a $100 supplement or anything that would, you know, mimic that?"
For sure. And supplements, in this case, and with all the things we're talking about, are definitely not the answer. With that said, I'm curious again in your experience, Corey, and I call these advanced maneuvers. So all the foundational pieces have to be in place. But have you found that there are some key substances where you're like, yeah, these really move the needle once people have those foundations set?
Oh, totally. I mean, it does. It depends what's going on. You know, there's certain neurotransmitter support that works really well. I find when it's needed, hormone replacement and peptides are like insane how fast they move things, just because they're actually giving information to the body on what to do. Mm-hmm. Though that's really probably been the biggest thing for moving the needle. Nutritional supplements, when you know what's going on and you pick the right protocol, they almost always move the needle. The trouble is when you're trying to guess as to what you need based on your symptoms, makes it really difficult to kind of get that improvement in symptoms, because you don't know what's causing it.
A quick note from our sponsor, Badass Fuel. 2 years ago, someone asked me what supplements I take to maintain my health, my energy, and my edge, and they were surprised that I only took 4 things consistently. For myself and my patients, there are 4 basics that support, at a foundational level, nearly every system in our body. In my quest for the highest quality ingredients and the easiest system for consistently incorporating supplementation into my routine, I formulated and manufactured my own line of foundational supplements. My intention with this line was first and foremost quality, but equally important was a system for taking and naming the support that eased the incorporation of supplements into your life. Trusted for myself and my patients, under the guidance of your own healthcare provider, I'm excited to invite you to check out our foundational product line, Badass Basics. You can learn more or order the products yourself by visiting www.badassfuel.com.
Corey, this is all so interesting. And what I actually want to understand a little bit more about is actually you and how you are moving the needle in your own life. So in the second phase of our interview, we have something called our KPIs, or key performance indicators. So just like we have them in our business, I believe that we have them in how we live our life as well. So I've got some quick rapid fire questions for you. Are you ready?
All right. I think so. We'll see, I guess.
Okay, first one. What's the most impactful book you have ever read? And I will just say, I usually have entrepreneurs on this podcast and they break rules right off the beginning and give me more than one. So if you've got more than one, you can share.
Keep it to one, hey? I would have to say, man, that is a good one. I honestly think the inner World of Trauma by Donald Kalshed. Jungian psychologist.
All right. Okay, I'm putting it on the list, and this will all be in the show notes. What is the one thing you are most consistent with respect to your health?
I am most consistent with exercise, light exposure, and cold exposure.
Nice. I haven't actually had anyone ever say the cold exposure, so I love it.
Yeah.
What is something totally badass about you that people would not otherwise know?
Oh man, badass about me. So many things. I just don't know where to start. maybe my sarcasm. I don't. I think the most badass thing about me is just actually what we've started with Nirvana Health. We get a lot of resistance with the colleges, with regulatory bodies, not because we're doing anything unethical or illegal, but just because we're doing things different. And so I think, you know, that's not easy for people to be able to deal with, which is why not a lot of people are pushing the needle. So I'd say just, yeah, dealing with that and trying to change our culture and the way that we look at health. I would have to say that's probably at the moment the most badass thing about me. I might have answered differently if you had asked me when I was 17, but
it's all good. It's all good. What do you do for fun or play?
I play hockey. I play baseball. I go out to the pubs and watch hockey games and football games with my friends. I go skiing. I go hiking. Typically anything associated with outdoors like camping is totally in my wheelhouse.
Says the man from Calgary. I love it.
That's right.
And last question for you. Entrepreneurism, are we born this way or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
I think we learn to become entrepreneurs. I was born into a family of absolutely no entrepreneurs whatsoever, and I wasn't an entrepreneur for a long time, and I just saw my potential and what I wanted to do and how I wanted to help change the world, and I realized that I was going to have to learn. So I think that we definitely learn, and we learn to think differently. We create new patterns in our brain by thinking differently, and it allows us to be successful. And then I think, for us, it's also about finding the right people to partner with that know what we don't know in the entrepreneurial world as well. So,
well, learning, success are definitely two hallmarks of the work that you are putting out into this world. Corey, where can we send people to learn more about what you're doing at Nirvana and your work generally?
Yeah, so if you go to www.nirvanahealth.com, that is our website. We have a bit of information on there. We try not to overwhelm anybody. We also have a YouTube channel, Nirvana Health. We do a lot of posting on Facebook and Instagram, new articles, research, things that we're doing. That's just at Nirvana Health as well. And the other thing we do for people as well is a complimentary discovery call. We have healthcare advisors that are trained. If you go to www.nirvana.ca/go, and I can send you these links as well, Megan. You can actually book a complimentary call with one of our healthcare advisors, and we can maybe help you figure out if you're not in the area. We can help you find maybe clinics that are doing similar things to us, or maybe you might be a good fit for our clinic. We can help give you an idea of that and maybe help point you in the right direction to kind of help satisfy those health goals that you might have.
Sounds amazing. Well, Corey, we will make sure everyone can access all of those things in our show notes. Thanks so much for being with me today.
Thanks a lot, Megan.
Hey, hey, bosses. If that interview resonated with you, I would love your feedback over on Apple Podcasts. Every single review, every comment you leave makes a huge difference in terms of the Anthropology Podcast being able to reach more people, help more people, and pull more individuals into our vector and vertical of leadership that we are using to try to change the world. Now, if you want to discuss a little bit more about today's topic or other topics that affect us as leaders and go-getters in this world, come on over and hang out with me in the Anthropology Collective. In this Facebook group, we have women from around the world dedicated to living a life of purpose, a healthy life, an intentional life as we cruise through and engage in our missions here on planet Earth. I would love for you to join us. I'm excited about what you do. Until we meet again next week, go build something amazing.